Welcome to the CDH Conversations podcast, where we will be talking about sexual harassment in the workplace. My name is Tyler Howie Aya, and I am an associate at CDH Kenya. Joining me today is Rizichi Kashero Ondego, an associate in our corporate and commercial and employment law departments at CDH, alongside Kate Nderu, who is a HR practitioner and director at Nightwise Human Capital here in Nairobi. Kate and Rizichi, thank you very much for joining this podcast to discuss what amounts to sexual harassment from both a legal and HR perspective, and to share some practical insights about what employers are expected to do when an employee reports an instance of sexual harassment, and on how employers can create effective reporting mechanisms. So as we delve in, Rizichi, perhaps you could tell us about what will typically amount to sexual harassment.
So sexual harassment is provided for under the Sexual Offences Act, as well as the Employment Act in Kenya. In essence, sexual harassment refers to any unwelcome sexual advances, requests for sexual favors, and other verbal or physical conduct of a sexual nature that tends to create a hostile or offensive work environment. The Employment Act breaks down that sexual harassment occurs if one, the employer, two, a representative of the employer, or three, a co-worker, directly or indirectly requests for sexual intercourse, contact, any other form of sexual activity that contains implied or expressed promise for preferential treatment, detrimental treatment, or a threat about someone's future in the particular organization. Sexual harassment can be written or spoken. It can be through visual material of a sexual nature, so this could be pictures, or it can be through physical behavior that makes an employee feel a certain way. Basically, it's unwelcome or offensive behavior.
Okay, so Kate, borrowing from that and adding on to that, what are some practical examples of conduct that will amount to sexual harassment that you've come across in your experience? Because, you know, Rizichi's talked about a wide range of conduct that could amount to sexual harassment. And just thinking about, you know, the remote working space or the hybrid working space where employees may not necessarily all be in one space. What are some practical examples of sexual harassment?
So in this day and age, it's very common to communicate through the internet. So this is becoming a very, very big area where this is being experienced, where you're sending a colleague a message. You're not expressly stating that you want a sexual act from them, but it's the messages that are covert. They're not explicitly stating, but it's like, oh, look at this video that I saw, and it's of a sexual nature. So this is equally considered as sexual harassment and in the hybrid and remote working context.
Okay, so I'm just thinking about, you know, a lot of employers have platforms such as Microsoft Teams, which has emojis, it has GIFs, it has a range of communication tools that employees can use to communicate. It sounds like that would sort of be categorized as potential tools to perpetrate sexual harassment. And so once an employee makes a report that they have been sexually harassed in the workplace, Rizichi, what should an employer do? What are their legal obligations?
An employer is obligated to take positive action. So if an employee comes and makes a complaint against a certain coworker, then the employer is required, one, to investigate the conduct. This was held in the case of Oko versus another and SRM, where they stated that once a complaint is lodged, an obligation is on the employer to positively act on that complaint and to ensure that the sexual harassment is eradicated by following the necessary processes that are in the company. Failure to act on that complaint, an employer has a risk of being held vicariously liable for the acts of that specific employee responsible for the sexual harassment. This was also the position held in the case of Teacher Services Commissions versus WJN5. So step one, act on the complaint, investigate. And step two, if the employee is found to be guilty or has perpetrated the sexual harassment, then they need to eradicate that particular situation according to the processes in the company.
Okay, great. So as we talk about eradication, there are some instances where in practice, you know, employers may choose to suspend the perpetrator as they carry out investigation. Rizichi, do you think that's a viable option that employers can use, you know, to ensure that they're sort of protecting both the employees rights and their confidentiality, etc.?
Yes, you can suspend the employee or the coworker while the investigation is being carried out. However, I would advise that this is put in an employment policy or the sexual harassment policy, that when a certain investigation has been carried, that you may be asked to go home for a certain period of time until a determination is made. But this has to be clearly communicated to the employees beforehand.
Right. Okay. And so that's a great point. And we'll circle back to policies because I think that's an important discussion that ought to be had in this context. Kate, same question to you. What is an employer required to do once a sexual harassment claim is reported? In your experience in the HR field, what sort of things have employers done in practice? Perhaps some practical examples?
Right. So it's about investigation. And key thing here is with due process. For the alleged perpetrator, and they remain an alleged perpetrator until there's been evidence, and for the victim as well. This is the person who's bringing out the complaint. So remember, as an employer, you also have full due process, because there's been cases in court where they ended up, it was a sexual harassment case, due process was not followed, but then someone sued for unfair termination and the employee was awarded a win. So you have to be very careful, and the due process is what you're mentioning, Tyler, the investigation, you give your show cause, provide the evidence that you're giving that this actually happened. And this is one of the big problems. The burden of proof, unfortunately, lies with the victim, and the victims are not bringing out this evidence. It's he said, she said. So this complicates these cases to investigate and find the proof. The victim is also sometimes not willing to come forward. So if someone is not willing to come forward and they've reported anonymously, what are you going to investigate, or who, or it's an allegation that you cannot bring the person to sit against the alleged perpetrator. So these are some of the complexities that we experience. The most difficult case that I've ever come across was an employee who was seconded to a third party. So think of your cleaner that you're hiring. This is an outsourced service, and it's the staff of your organization that's harassing. So there is a complaint against a third party employee. And this was very complicated to solve. And what ended up happening, there was a negotiation to, because remember, there's money involved. The cleaning company doesn't want to lose the contract from the service provider. So it was extremely complicated. And what ended up happening, there was no evidence. It was just, oh, this person likes me and they keep sending me messages at night, calling me, and I'm not interested. So this was easy to transfer, but it can get very, very complex. And as employers, we need to think about all the dynamics around sexual harassment, not just with co-workers. It's not just happening with co-workers. Another complicated one was with a customer. So a customer sexually harassed a staff. And as an employer, you have to protect your staff. So this was also a very difficult case. Are you going to lose the business because the customer is giving you money? This is the person who's buying your bread and butter. Do you lose that customer in the interest of protecting your staff? These are some of the relevant examples I can think of at the moment, Tyler.
Right. And I think there's such worthwhile considerations that employers should have beforehand, like you said, Kate. And so this segues great into the next point of discussion, which is about how employers can create an effective reporting mechanism. So, you know, not just if it's employee to employee harassment, but like you've mentioned, Kate, if it's a client or if it's a service provider, etc. So Rizichi, talk to us about what steps an employer can take in creating an effective sexual harassment reporting mechanism. You spoke about a policy earlier. So are there, you know, requirements about what the policy has to cover?
Yes. So to start off the basic, the Employment Act requires an employer to develop a sexual harassment policy if they have 20 or more employees. But usually we advise as best practice, as soon as you start employing, to develop sexual harassment policy that will basically highlight the steps that will be taken, the reporting mechanisms. So it's very clear from the get-go what is expected of the employees and what is expected if a certain action occurs. So as Kate said, it's very difficult to determine what behavior is sexual harassment. Now, this is where you define it in the sexual harassment policy. And we'd usually advise it for you to have a very broad explanation encompassing all types of behavior. So pictures, WhatsApp messages, Teams messages, physical contact, this will all be included in the definition of sexual harassment so that it is very clear to the employees what falls under what. this sexual harassment policy should also include the steps that will be taken once a complaint is lodged. Firstly, how is a complaint lodged? To whom is it lodged to? So is it to, obviously cannot be to your direct line manager. So is it to a HR representative? Is it to a board member? These are the steps that will be included in the policy. It will also make it very clear that every employee is entitled to employment that is free of sexual harassment and the disciplinary measures that will be taken if one is deemed to actually appropriate against any person, employee or customer. And if they are found liable, the steps that will be taken. So is it going to be a first warning if it's this certain behavior? Second warning, is it this certain behavior? Or will it amount to gross misconduct and where your employment will be terminated immediately? Lastly, it will also explain how the claim of sexual harassment will be held. And it's very important that we explain that the confidentiality aspect of it is very important. So who lodges the complaint will be kept confidential. The circumstances related to the complaint will also be kept confidential unless it is required for the investigation. And if the investigation has been conducted, that is, if we have to interview certain witnesses, then certain information may be exposed to these persons, but in general, most of the information will be kept confident so as to help the investigation. This was highlighted in a 2022 case here in Kenya CNR, which basically stated that where an employer takes no action and where there's no sexual harassment policy, that the employer was found to be conducting unfair labor practices and the claimant was entitled to recover damages for the sexual harassment. So in essence, it's just best practice and safer to develop a sexual harassment policy as soon as possible.
Right. And I suppose that also would be a potential solution to some of the challenges that Kate mentioned, you know, where you have victims who may not necessarily want to testify, or they don't necessarily want to be involved in the investigation, and yet their evidence is required. So where an employer has a robust and comprehensive policy that sets out the steps that are to be taken, and the employee is already aware of it, and they have stages of documentation already set out and what should happen, then that may ease the investigation and the process that an employer can take in ensuring that, as you mentioned, Rizichi, the sexual harassment is eradicated. And so I'll field the same question to Kate. Kate, what are some ways that employers can create effective sexual harassment reporting mechanisms based on your experience and your practice?
Right. So it is advisable to outsource a service provider to carry out the investigation in the interest of justice and fairness for the victim and transparency. We've realized when this is being handled in-house, there's always that complexity and everybody is scared of coming out. The confidentiality is compromised. So it's advisable that you outsource to a whistleblowing service and an investigation organization that can duly execute the investigation with fairness and comprehensively. The other aspect is to build trust, because a lot of cases are going unreported because the reporting mechanisms, again, because they're internal, they're not trusted. And a lot of people feel that in the organization feel that, oh, this is on, will only be an HR matter and will end here. So this also would support to build a trust in that reporting mechanism and that the investigation will follow due process for the alleged perpetrator and will be fair for the victim. It's also important to outline the consequences of what sexual harassment is in your organizational context and also related to your nature of work. Because if you have people who are traveling outside the city, outside the country, this is another area where these incidences are being reported, that we were in a conference and this person wanted to come into my room. So define what sexual harassment is in your policy in relation to what your business is, your nature of work, and identify the areas that this potentially poses a risk. Clarify the time factor. This is a big, big issue, that if I report sexual harassment, does it take 6 months to be investigated? Does it take 14 days? It's very, very important to clarify these timelines, because imagine the environment that you're creating where you take too long to investigate. So ideally, within a 14-day period, it should come to a close. And this also helps to just declares that work environment where I'm not working together with the person that I'm alleging sexually harassed me.
Right, great. Rizichi, Kate, this has been a very enlightening conversation. And that brings us to the end of today's discussion. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Tyler. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.